My wants do not matter. It may be that the many-faced god has led you here to be his instrument, but when I look at you, I see a child, and worse, a girl child. Many have served him of many faces through the centuries, but only a few of his servants have been women. Women bring life into the world. We bring the gift of death. No one can do both. Welcome to 2C1C, a Game of Thrones podcast founded in 2010 by myself, Will Lentz, Greg Atkinson, and Brett Zeiler. Now hosted by myself, Daryl Lloyd, and Kyle Vansel, with guest appearances by past hosts and more. Many thanks to GRRM and FFG for making this possible, CardGameDB for our hosting, and Josh Woodward for the Creative Commons music you hear in this episode. Welcome to Season 4.5. There we go. I was in an Arya mood since we got a little bit more of Arya in the last episode of the TV show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I haven't seen the latest episode yet.
Ah, shucks. Okay, well, we won't talk about it too much other than it was much slower than the earlier ones this episode.
That's it was probably as slow as the one before that.
That's okay. I've already read about all the controversy.
So. Okay, fair enough. Well, welcome back to a mostly non-spoilerific episode of Two Champs and a Chump. This week, we have a returning champ. So, thanks to my guest host, slash returning host.
Fair enough. Well, my name is Brett Zyla.
But also, we have a brand new voice to bring to you on the podcast this week. My other guest host is...
I'm Daniel Ack, or Danny Grawl on the boards. Probably the first DC meta mate to come on your show.
I don't know if I would go with probably. I think I would go with definitely.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So it is
a very, very auspicious occasion.
Yeah, I think it is. It's quite an honor.
Glad the honor for me.
You contacted us.
Thanks for letting me come in.
Yeah, no problem. I mean, because you originally emailed me regarding draft, and I'd been looking for new topics, and draft is number one, awesome, and number two, amazing. So I thought that it would be good to go ahead and just kind of conscript you into our draft discussion for an episode.
Yes, indeed you did.
Yeah, I really didn't give you much choice in the matter, did I?
Yeah, you pretty much, like, what's it called whenever they, like, you pressed me. You pressed me into you.
Yeah, press ganging. I've been learning from those, whatchamacallem, Wormhordes guys at the game store.
Yeah, you pressed me into your clown boat.
We're just trying to fit as many people in as we can.
Now I've joined the ranks of future ex-guest hosts.
You know, there are quite a few of those, actually.
There's a lot.
Yeah. It's an elite group, but a large group.
Yeah, I guess you could call me kind of like the chump of the DC meta.
Ah, so that's why we're having you on. Now I get it.
But yeah, it's a pleasure to be on. Thanks for having me. And I'm glad we can finally bring some light to the draft format, which has just started this year. And hopefully get some people interested in it, because we've got a great opportunity coming up in the next couple of weeks that people
should really? Know. Tell us more.
Being a little selfish here, this was originally one of the reasons why I thought to ask Kenan about coming on the show, was to talk about our upcoming draft tournament, hopefully the first ever biggest draft tournament that we've seen for Thrones, And we're hosting it in the D.C. area at a store called Dream Wizards in Rockville, Maryland, on Saturday, May 24th. So when this goes up, it'll be a couple of weeks, right?
Yeah, it'll be about 2 weeks, because this will be the episode going up on Friday the 9th.
Okay, yeah, so a couple of weeks, there's still plenty of time to get your plane tickets, book some hotels. There's still great hotel deals in this area. You can probably find a hotel for like 70, 80 bucks a night. Split it with your friends, come on out, have a good time. But yeah, we've already got, I think, creeping up to like 40 confirmed people. We've got people coming from the UK,
awesome.
From, you know, from Canada, New York, we've got some people come from Boston, North Carolina, hoping some people come from, the Midwest. I don't know if any of y'all have decided to come out or not, but you're welcome. And, I think California, unfortunately, has KublaCon that weekend.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Unfortunately, I doubt you'll tear anyone away from Kubla.
Well, we got Steve Simone coming.
Oh, nice, right.
And Wisconsin, so all over the place are coming out to the draft tournament. It's hopefully going to be one of the first that we hope to do, at least once a year in the D.C. area. We want to try and create sort of a recurring thing, because D.C. loves draft.
Now, draft, I do have a couple questions, if I can speak there, over my own tongue, that is. Now, if I remember right, for a regional or two in the past, you guys have had a cap due to space, right? Is there anything like that or a product cap at this tournament?
Not at all. Not at all. In fact, that's why we're doing it at a different store. We've had regionals before at a store that's in D.C. proper. But this store is a little bigger. Got a lot of space. This is kind of like, I actually live about 5 minutes away from the store, so it's kind of like my we just kind of like helped, you know, fix it up, paint it up, looks great, and they've been really gracious to kind of cooperate with us and work with us to do this. We got first of all, I guess I should say the name of the tournament is called Calling the Banners, and so kind of the segue into the prizes for each top performing. You get to walk away with your very own, like, it's like 6-7 foot tall house banner.
That's awesome. They look great. Are those custom made, or is that like from the HBO stuff?
Yeah, they're custom. They're custom. We get most of our prizes are custom made. We make custom, like, token bags, for top eight. We did get some of those awesome, deck boxes, the Time Walker ones.
Oh, those are great.
Yeah, so we got a custom wooden Vera box that first place is going to walk away with, as well as a custom play mat. And Corey's posted pictures of a lot of the prizes online already. You can find those at the draft and the tournament announcement. It's on the FFG site, it's on CardGameDB, it's on AGOT Cards. And so you can see a lot of the prizes. You see a lot of the information, the address, and you can even respond in any one of those threads to let us know that you're coming so that we can make sure to have enough product on hand. The cost of entry is just $20, and that actually buys your draft pack in order to participate as well as pay the entry. And then another $5 if you need a starter. And we'll talk about
what. But if you have a starter, you don't need to pay that.
Right, yeah, you can bring your own starter.
Okay, good. Yeah, it sounds like an awesome event, and you actually already touched on my other question, which was going to be about the prize support, so sounds really cool.
Yeah, the Barra box is, forgive me if I'm wrong, but is that the one that Corey won for overall back in 2011?
Yes.
Okay, I thought it looked familiar.
So a truly unique prize.
It is. It is one of a kind.
Yes.
It even comes with a little key that you can, like, hang around your neck.
And, like, to keep the lock deck. Is working?
Yes, the lock works.
Wow.
Yes, truly one of a kind. So, yeah, the box, the play mats, we're giving away gift cards. We've got the token bags, the deck boxes. We've got promo cards, like alt art cards from various, you know, season kits and stuff like that that we're giving to all entrants. So if you haven't gotten one of those yet, you can get one here.
Cool.
Well, so, yeah, we hope to see you.
Well, I think this is probably as good a time as any to segue into the main discussion for this episode, which is also draft.
Shocking.
You know, Naruto Brett is a longtime fan of limited formats.
It's my, you call it my favorite format. Indeed. For any game, really.
Yeah, because you've played it a lot in other games, right?
I've drafted a very large amount of Magic, and then also World of Warcraft. The first year I actually went to Gen Con, I did fairly well in some pretty big limited World of Warcraft tournaments for their card game.
Yeah, I was thinking, because that was what you were playing right before you started playing Thrones, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. And then I've drafted some Magic and Thrones for many years now, and Dan is just kind of getting his feet wet, if I understand things right.
Oh, yeah, I haven't drafted in this, well, most people probably haven't drafted in this this pool, card pool, but I've done it one or two times, and what we used to do, like, I've been to Gen Con several years now, and you know, when we go back to the hotel, we, like, the first couple of years, we buy boxes when those were still kind of available.
Oh, just drafts.
Yeah, just draft late hours in the night.
Yep, those were always great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you've got a pretty good spectrum on the show tonight, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We also do the Butt Slap Faerty Cube.
Mm-hmm.
Got cube. Have y'all built a cube?
I forgot about that. I vaguely just remember that didn't they go through and scribble like new abilities and errata on a bunch of cards?
Yeah, they basically like took a Sharpie and like redacted out all the bad parts of the character abilities.
That's awesome.
Added stuff, added crests, added strength, reduced gold. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It was very fun. Very fun. And crazy combos. Some of those CCG cards were very powerful.
Yeah, yeah. In some places that bar was a lot higher.
And it's kind of interesting now, like, seeing this new draft pool. You know, of, like, old cards that you don't really see anymore in Constructed. How they have, like, a new value in draft.
Oh, yeah, they can have a totally new life,
mm-hmm.
which is one of the things I love about it. You have to evaluate things very differently, I think.
Yeah, I guess we're going to talk about that, how we kind of evaluate a card as we draft it.
Well, speaking of different, then, I think one thing you wanted to make sure we hit on, Dan, was how draft and Constructed is different, right?
Right, yeah. Yeah, I mean, just thinking about how, even just you construct the deck, it's, you have 5-card plot decks instead of 7. You have 40-card decks instead of 60. So you're thinking about, you know, all different sort of, you know, different curves, different resource base, different plots, you know, whenever you have to draft half of your plot deck. That can definitely shape how, not only how you build the deck, but I guess how things play out throughout the tournament. Like, Valor, for example, is only draftable Is that like a rare? I think it's a rare.
I think it is.
Yeah. So, yeah, you'll see one in I don't know how many
battles. Yeah.
I haven't delved deeply into the contents of the draft packs thread on CardGameDB, but I know they've mapped out the entire card pool, so as far as the list goes, I don't see rarity listed here with them, but people may have been working on that as well.
Well, you may be able to guess with a lot of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, you can get a rough idea. But, I mean, just in case any listeners are kind of confused, because I do know we have some new folks every once in a while and whatnot, some of the less competitive-edged people, as far as, you know, traveling and going to Gen Con and the like. The draft format, not only is the card pool different, but mechanically it's different. So you get that fixed starter, and then you get a random assortment of other cards in the draft pack. That's divvied up and into individual smaller, what is it, 10-card stacks, I think?
Right, yeah. I think there's 5 stacks of 10.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so you'll actually look at that without letting anybody else see. You'll pick one that you would like from it. Again, keep that hidden. Then you pass to the next person, probably clockwise to begin with. Person to your left passes to you. You choose out of their leftovers. And you keep rotating until that little pack is gone. And then you repeat this process over and over until all of the cards have been looked at and chosen by everyone. And then you have to build your actual deck for the tournament out of the cards that you chose. So it winds up being very interesting, I think, seeing what comes around to you. One of the most interesting things to me is seeing what cards are in your opening pack for, you know, the first assortment that you look at to begin with before anyone else has, and seeing which of those make it all the way around the table back to you. Because you can get a lot of information about what other people are doing out of that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's kind of like a game within a game.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a good enough memory.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely is a game within a game, or even without the memory, just if you know every time the person to your left passes to you, you're not seeing any Baratheon cards, you know, someone, probably that person or the person before them, in your pool there is grabbing the Baratheon cards before they get to you. So, you know, that can influence your decision making. You know, is it worth you trying to pull Baratheon cards when they come to you? Or should you just let them go and let someone else have them?
Yeah, I think it gets a little easier, I think, whenever, or harder, I guess, the way you look at it. But whenever you have a larger pot, like a drafting pot, you have 8 people drafting from one pot, like, you're not going to see your same stack, really.
Yeah. It makes it more harder to pick up on those signals.
Right. So, yeah. Kind of, you have to really, I guess, evaluate cards more on their own merits. Pick the good ones whenever you see them.
Of course, speaking of good ones, an important option that you can always do is hate draft.
Right.
Which is fun. you know, which basically means if you're fairly certain, for instance, that the person to your left, I'll keep using that example, is playing Baratheon, and you happen to be on the counterclockwise rotation where you would pass cards to them, and you're sitting there staring at, say, Melisandre, and there's not much else in the pack you want, you may take that Melisandre, even if you're playing Lannister, just so someone else that is playing Baratheon can't have it.
I mean, and Game of Thrones draft, even more than most other games, hate drafting is maybe even a little stronger because you do have a lion in one of the bots in your draft pack. So you can take, you know, the random one or two off out of house cards and then still have a good chance of playing them.
So,
yeah, and you mean alliance the plot.
Oh, the plot, so yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And not to mention the agenda, the treaty.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
So arguably,
you definitely have some options.
Maybe that means it's even less sort of hate drafting in Thrones, because when I think of that in other games, you're right, that's more just keeping it from someone else without a good chance of you playing it. In Thrones, that definitely changes a little.
Yeah, I mean, it could come into play whenever it's a house-only card.
Mm-hmm.
But even then, yeah.
You've still got the treaty agenda.
Exactly.
Which is specific to that draft pack, for folks that don't know, and lets you play cards from another chosen house without the penalty, much like, you know, Alliance or Conquest or something like that in Constructed, but does also let you use the house-only cards, which allows for some pretty crazy stuff, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that kind of touches on the general draft idea, but since we were talking about that agenda just now, what do you guys think about that treaty agenda? Do you like it? You know, how often is it worth actually playing it, as, you know, as far as draft goes?
I don't know. I've said most of the time, and keep in mind, with this specific draft, like, card, what's the word I'm looking for? This group of cards. I've only drafted this once, and I was at Worlds last year. But I think most of the time you're going to end up doing it, if just because, unless you're cutting a house really, really, really hard, you're rarely going to have enough quality cards of one house to put together a decent deck. Most of the people that I saw doing well at Worlds and drafts were playing the Treaty Agenda.
Yeah, and I should also throw in, because I neglected to mention it a moment ago, that the penalty on this treaty is that you need 5 additional power to win the game.
Yeah, that's what which is a pretty significant. I mean, for the person that does manage to draft only one house, you know. Not to mention, you know, smattering of out of house characters, locations, whatever, or a lot of neutral stuff. You know, like that's a big advantage.
I mean, tell that to Will and his mono Martell deck that would look like a constructed Martell Maester deck that I smashed at Worlds last year.
You did, and you smashed it with the most unassuming of cards that no one wanted in the draft, which of course was Milk of the Poppy.
Yeah, I had like 3 or 4 of them.
Yeah,
and they crushed all day.
Yeah, and you mentioned 4, actually. That's another good thing to mention in draft. There's no like, play set limit or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You have as many copies as you draft.
Yep.
Which was actually detrimental to me. I think I ended up with, like, 3 copies of Shaggy Dog in this one time I drafted.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That's not a card that you want to have multiples of.
So it's all about that learning curve. Unless, of course, he was the last card in the pack, and you guys.
It was the last card. I got it as the last card in the draft in the pack like twice.
Wow.
I drafted it the first time because I was playing Stark. Mm-hmm. The other 2 times I got it to me.
As far as the agenda goes, I think that it's definitely good if you don't really need to use it because you were able to get enough of the single house. But I don't think that drawback is as bad as others, you know, could have been, like, say the Alliance agenda in the regular card pool where you're giving away 2 gold or a card every turn. You know, the drawback here may slow you down, but it really helps ease up on your card choices enough that I'm mostly in favor of it.
I mean, most of the time, the reality is it's necessary if you want to have a good setup first, if you want to have a good curve on your deck, it's pretty much necessary. I mean, because you only get the Alliance once every 5 plots. And the other time, I mean, if you don't get a good resource base to start off, it's really hard to pay the out-of-house penalty and be able to kind of stay in the game against others who manage to build their deck, you know, in a good way out of the
the Alliance or Mono House or whatever. So, yeah, I mean, the reality is it's really just, it's necessary most of the time. Five power, like, I mean, I guess we can talk about that more when we talk about, like, the differences in how the game plays out and talk about our top five picks, but, like, you know, just like Wildlands, you know, like, in Constructed, they were dominant for a long time just because aggro was powerful and they were able to maintain board position and keep the lead so that those extra, you know, 4 or 6 power wasn't that really big of a deal. Right. Sort of the same concept here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you get good characters, if you maintain the board position, if you get the card advantage, some of it comes down to luck of the draw, luck of the draft, but then that drawback of 5 power isn't that big of a deal.
You know, I may be jumping ship to a new topic here, but you mentioned, you know, keeping a good curve and everything, and in light of the treaty agenda, that made me think about the fixed locations in the draft pack, because it's a very interesting pool of resource locations, I think, because you get one of each of the C's, then 3 Rose Road, 3 C Roads, and 1 Red Keep, and, you know, connected to the treaty agenda there, sometimes I do really think about playing it just so that I'm able to use 2 different C's in my deck.
Right.
Which is interesting, you know, because in a 40-card deck, if you do play all of those limited locations, it is very likely that you wind up with something stuck in your hand, especially on setup, that you're not able to play because of the limited keyword. So, you know, I'm just kind of curious, when you're looking at that sort of curve, when you guys are looking at stuff, are you guys likely to go ahead and play the full complement of the locations here in the fixed pool? Do you generally cut it back some? Is influence even possible to play looking at this?
That's a really good question. As far as my income locations go, I actually rate income locations that you can draft really high. Things like Treat of Seal, Shadow Black Lane. I grab those ahead of a lot of other things. In draft, I think one of the most important things you can thoroughly focus on is your setup and your resources. And those fill both of those roles, being 0-cost cards that let you play more as the game goes on. So I do my best to draft as many of those as possible, and then I just kind of fill in with, you know, some of the C Roads and Rose Roads as I feel like I might need them for whatever deck I'm playing.
I mean, when you think about it, for a 40-card deck, you know, something like 7 resources is similar to having, I guess, you know, percentage-wise, like 11 locations, maybe a little less, I think, but an 8 is similar to having like 12, which is, you know, pretty standard, I guess, in terms of resources for a 60-card deck. So, you know, even if you just ran the 3 Rose, 3 C Roads, and 1 of the C's, you know, you already kind of got a pretty good baseline in terms of resources. And if you happen to draft another one of those 0 costs streets, you know, and that's great. But then having, you know, say you're doing both outs, like you're talking about, Will, like both of the C's, then that gives you, you know, basically like, you know, 8 out of 40, it's like 12 out of 60. Pretty good, like, I think resource base for a draft deck. And the limited keyword is a little bit of a drop. I mean, we might, well, we definitely can't be as efficient as we can with constructed decks, obviously. But the limited, you know, I guess it doesn't bother me, you know. Limited locations are still, you know, in a lot of ways safer. I mean, even just with a 40-card deck, the chances of you drawing a location in order to play for a resource, you know, is a little bit higher, just less variance. So, I don't think the limited is too big of a drawback. You know, you might have one stuck in your hand, but it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah. I have to say, I don't really find the limited to be too much of a drawback myself. I generally play 5 or 6 of those in the deck myself. I would say I normally am looking more at like 10 resources in the deck. Granted, I also have difficulty trimming my decks down all the way to the absolute minimum. So I'm usually a little over 40. But in draft, there's two reasons that I would skew the resource curve even higher than those ratios you were talking about. One, because, you know, I am probably not completely, like, mono house. And maybe I drafted that sweet Drogon or Robert Baratheon or something, even though I'm playing Lannister, and that character's so good, I want to go ahead and slip it in and pay the extra 2 gold. Or maybe I need, you know, whatever, a location to route out an influence base, whatever it might be, the odds that I may have a bit more expensive cards because of that goes up. But also, we've got those fixed plots in the draft pack, and we can't necessarily guarantee we're going to draft something else. And I mean, looking at those plots, we've got, well, Feast or Famine is either 6 or 0, so it's hard to count on that in a lot of game situations. I'm not a real big fan of it. Alliance is 4, which is nice. Wildfire Assault's only 3. Shores of Nysar's only 3. Holding the Trident's only 3. So I'd say our plot gold averages definitely lower than your normal constructed deck. So
that's a good point. I mean, and sees the streets are something to consider, I think, whenever they get passed around. You know, again, I think we can talk about this later, but I don't know if I would necessarily pick them over, I mean, I wouldn't pick them over bomb cards, I wouldn't pick them over to claim, I wouldn't pick them over, you know, really good characters, but.
Oh yeah, I mean, obviously character work won't do the games, but when there's not an obvious pick, I weigh them higher than a lot of other things.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Cause yeah, I mean, even just the possibility of getting them on 7 is gonna get you out of the gate better in order to get that board position quicker.
Well, you know, maybe that's a reasonable spot to go ahead and segue into how would you evaluate the cards that are picked. You know, what are you using to decide what you actually draft out of the pack?
Sally, you want to go for it?
I feel like I've already stressed that I value, and I assume most people probably do, is value setup very high. Obviously, you know, bomb characters probably win you the game, but I personally try to not draft too many of those usually. Like, you know, the guys like, you know, like Will said, Robert Baratheon, you know, things like that are up there in costs. I tend to focus more on like the cheaper guys, things like, the one cost Brotherhood guy with the military icon, Fanatical Follower. Is that his name?
Yes.
Yeah, they get the +1 for each Sea Road and Rose Road, especially because that counts yours and your opponents. Mm-hmm. And everyone's going to be playing a lot of those. Those guys are surprisingly good. Especially at one cost.
Yeah, it's probably the best chunk in draft.
Yeah.
Probably so.
But no, anytime you can get a guy that's going to be, you know, in the 0, 1, or 2 cost range, I think they're generally probably even sometimes stronger than the bigger guys, because you can pretty much always play them. Whereas, you know, several times, especially if it's like an out-of-house bomb, you're either waiting to play your alliance or you've already had to play it because maybe you needed 4 gold earlier before you drew into, you know, your out-of-house Robert Baratheon. He's been sitting in your hand until you can come up with enough gold to play him.
Yeah. Should we define bomb, I guess? Like, that may be kind of subjective.
You know, that seems perfectly reasonable. How would you define bomb then?
For me... I guess it's really, I guess, board impact, simply put. Like, it's if it stays on the table, it's gonna win you the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things that I look at are, you know, anything that is raises claim, anything like pseudo claim or mitigates claim, especially if it's repeatable.
Repeatable character control.
Yeah, repeatable character control, repeatable claim mitigation, whether it's, you know, intrigue, military, whatever. Those I think are the bomb. You know, so something like something that you're going to get multiple use at, you know, like the standing red viper, you don't have an answer for him, it's going to be very difficult to deal with. Venomous Blade.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's, you know, just like that one. Also, I think, what is it, Illyn Payne? The core Illyn Payne? Also, like, I mean, it can just chew through characters. So
I don't know, one of Willemite's favorites is the Fleming Pitch Tower, the Targ location.
Oh, totally.
When you want to challenge by four or more, just pretty much off a gun. I give it like minus four, can, and then killed at zero. Is that right?
Yeah.
It is a limited response, but there's like maybe I can't even think of any other limited responses that are even in the draft format, so it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, any of that big stuff like that, anything that really lets you just close the game is a bomb in my book. Whether that closing the game is through just demolishing their character base or just, you know, springboarding into a huge power game, you know, like Robert or something, whichever way it's going to do it, those are the bombs for me.
Yeah. Cards that win the game, if they aren't, pretty much immediately.
Yeah. Which, of course, is tough, like Brett was saying there, when you're looking at these cards that are coming around, you want to, the first instinct is to grab as many of these bombs as you can. You know, you see a Venomous Blade, you see a Flaming Pitch Tower, you see Robert, you know, you just want to grab it all, but that's not going to build a cohesive deck. Not only for being spread around so many houses, but also because of that cost issue. So Brett's right, you totally always have to still keep that curve in mind, and you are going to want to draft these cheap, smaller characters, the followers, the Doubting Septas, whatever it might be. But I think the main thing is make sure you are drafting characters. If a pack comes around and you don't know what to pick out of it, I would always say default to a character that you can afford to play. Because that's the worst feeling in the world, to draft, you know, all this awesome events and plots and whatnot, and then realize you get to the end and you only have six characters.
Yeah.
Which my friend Andy actually did in a draft, several years ago. I forget what all the amazing Baratheon stuff was he had, probably a little bit of Stark stuff here and there too, but then he sat down to actually build his deck and realized he was never going to have a character on the board to use any of it. And draft really brings everything back home and back to the challenge phase and making and defending and surviving those challenges. You got to have characters to do it.
Yeah, that's definitely good advice. When in doubt, take a character. Always take characters. Because you want to be able to have at least half of your deck. Half of your deck characters.
Indeed. You know, and thinking about that, I would say, you know, there are definitely good events floating around, but in draft, I think that normal ratio on events goes down some as far as how many people are likely to draft and likely to play. I think you'll definitely see less of them.
Yeah, that's another thing I ended up with a lot of copies of when I drafted once is Wars of One with Quills. So I had like three Shaggy Dogs and like four Wars of One with Quills. Ugh, that's definitely a common card.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I mean, and it's a potent one, though. You can pull it off.
I do look at my curve, too. You know, I try to, especially like neutral chubs, knees, and stuff like that. Definitely try to draft those. But I don't put as much stress on it just for the simple reason that, you know, most people are going to be running Wildfire Assault. And so that's two resets within, you know, four or five plots.
Yeah, it comes up very quick.
It comes up very quickly. And so, it almost isn't worth flooding the board in order to try to get board control that way by flooding the board. Because you're just gonna lose characters when Wildfire comes around.
And you loop around so much quicker again too. I've had a lot of draft games that didn't end by, you know, plot five. And then you're staring down those resets again whenever you loop.
Yeah, and that's another reason why I think Valor can be a trap in draft. It's a great card, but we've become so used to it defining constructed format that you know, when it comes around in draft, like it's sort of like automatic. You really need to think about how you're going to build your deck around Valor. Just because, I mean, because it comes up so much sooner. So you've got to be able to rebound and, you know, gain board presence again after that Valor hits. And doing it with, you know, 2-0-0, and that's, it's the same problem we see in Constructed, where like a Valor can win you the game or lose you the game. But I think it's sort of enhanced in the draft format.
Sort of. I kind of think the benefits are also enhanced, though, because it's seen so rarely. You know, in Constructed, people are used to accounting for that and holding more of the characters back and, you know, not loading up on duplicates of unique characters and so on and so forth. But in something like draft, where it's not, you know, just automatically assumed to be in every deck, it's one of the rare cards, it's not going to be around very often, I don't think people come into a game expecting it anymore. So I think you're really also likely to catch someone with, you know, Robert, Drogon, and Cersei all on the board or whatever it might be, and then you just wipe them out completely, and they've lost all their bombs, and they're scrambling to find any way to save you off. So, I mean, it still rewards smart play. I just think, you know, it amps up both sides of the equation.
It's definitely much more of a surprise.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the first time we see a final play of Valor against you is something else.
So it'll be a good time to segue into top five picks. I'm excited about that.
Yeah, that sounds reasonable to me. You know, give you a little insight into the sort of things that we would choose out of the card pool as our top things to look for. Do we want to just rotate each card, or does someone want to do their whole top five?
Yeah, so let's rotate.
Okay. Dan, why don't you lay that first one on us?
Okay. Well, okay, so when I draw those first 10 cards, anytime I see a 2-claim plot in my starting 10, I'll draft it. So, I don't know, I'd probably say Negotiations, The Great Sept.
Oh yeah.
That's
great card.
Decent
advantage.
Gold, good claim, and card advantage all in one cards.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and same sort of argument with Valor, you know, that it's just not seen very often. There's not a lot of 2-claim that people are preparing for in drafts, so that you can really make that count.
I like it. Yep. Well, I'm going to go next, and I'm also going to give we were talking about repeatable effects, and especially things like card drops. I know Meraxes and Longship Iron Victory are both in the format. So those are both cards that I would take pretty high. Probably Meraxes over Longship Iron Victory, just because of Iron Victory's, you know, weird warship requirement. But Meraxes is one that I would take pretty high.
Yeah, I think I would definitely pick Meraxes over that. LIV is tough. When I was drafting down in Tulsa a couple months back, there were a ton of LIVs that went by. There had to have been 3 or 4 of them in our pool, but nobody was grabbing them because it's got that requirement that you have to have the Greyjoy character in play, or it gets knelt. So you really can't splash it. It has to go in a primary Greyjoy deck.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely Meraxes is one that I would take really high. And it also gives you the dominance power strength, which is great too.
Yeah, especially if you're treating and you really need to eke out all the power you can.
Mm-hmm. Well, William?
Yeah. I think my first choice, probably gonna be one of the splashier ones. Mine is going to be Viserion. I love all the dragons in draft, but mainly because of the stealth and 4 strength, which just almost certainly wins you any challenge on attack in draft you need to throw them into, which is great. But also because of his ability. Not the ambush, let's be honest. I really don't think that influence is viable in this draft pool. You're not going to be jumping him into play and surprising people.
but you are going to be discarding zero cost locations. You're going to be knocking out, maybe they get a C on the board, maybe they have a C road, maybe they drafted a Street of Sisters. Whatever it is, not only are you winning the challenge, probably knocking off characters with military, but you're also attacking that resource base, which, as we said earlier, is so important in draft. And it's just a huge double whammy to keep doing that.
Yeah, I mean, well, you could be playing, you know, the Red Keep. You never know. You could ambush that in.
You could. I mean, it is possible. I just don't feel it's a great idea. I think that's an effective ban. Unless you guys have anything else on Vosirian.
Nope. Yeah, no. He's definitely strong, repeatable, powerful.
Okay, so back to me. Mm-hmm. Keeping on the same thing. You know, like I said, I take 2 claim. Retaliation.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
4 gold, 2 claim. Yeah, that's one of the higher, one of the higher income counts, in terms mm-hmm. of plots. And, not much more to say. So.
Yeah, no. Yeah. Retaliation's definitely really good. So it comes back to me. Mm-hmm. I'm actually going with another Targ card. That's going to be a Jogo. That's not the one you were thinking it was going to be.
Yeah, no, it wasn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but yeah, Jogo, I guess we've already stressed how good anything repeatable is, but repeatable draw with him on a, he's on a well-costed body. Potentially yeah. so.
Yeah. I mean, and you're less likely to have any, you know, the redundancy of multiple copies of a card you really want to draw. So, arguably, that makes sources of draw more important to dig into it. Being repeatable like that, he's great.
Oh, yeah?
All right. Well, oddly enough, mine is also a Targ card. I don't know if you listeners are getting this idea, but I certainly feel that Targ might be the strongest house in this draft pool.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's a tough call, but I can't naysay either of Rhett's choices so far, and I definitely love my choices. Mine's going to be the Flaming Pitch Tower. Yeah, all of those 4 strength stealthy dragons are in this card pool, and like I said before, you are almost certainly winning that challenge the way things work out in draft. It puts you right at that 4 strength point that you need to trigger the location, and then you just knock out essentially any character that they have on the board, barring, you know, the Conclave and that Dane army, as far as the pool goes, at least that I can remember off the top of my head.
This is a good time to mention, though, it is no attachments. And, attachments, just simply because Valor is so much rarer, I mean, attachments also have a little bit more value in terms of staying power.
Right.
And, you know, those actually do protect you from a lot of the Targ kill stuff.
It is possible. But partly, you know, I kind of look at it as being a lot like that 2 claim, which you really like, you know. And most of the time, the 2 challenges I really want that on, of course, are military and intrigue. And so I just kind of look at this as an extra military claim. And just whatever I can knock off with it is great. And that attrition really adds up in draft where they probably don't have as many of those repeatable draw or, you know, reveal or recursion sort of effects to help offset that.
Yeah, definitely a strong card.
Mm-hmm.
All right, back to me.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay, I mentioned this guy earlier. So I'm actually going to switch to a character, even though I'm tempted to choose another 2-claim plot.
I wondered if that was going to be your whole selection.
I was thinking about it. Actually, yeah, I'm going to go with another 2-claim plot. I'll leave my other 2 for Fear of Winter.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, this is arguably probably better than Retaliation, you know. Similar negotiation, like, it's sort of card advantage, or, you know, it keeps board advantage. Gives you 2 claim, gives you decent initiative. I mean, we know how strong it is, and in Constructed, I don't think its strength is diminished at all in draft. It's just a great card.
I would absolutely agree with that.
I pretty well agree, about like 90%.
But it also, I think, kind of hits that same Balor thing where the pluses and minuses mm-hmm. both are increased because of the quicker plot rotation. So there is the chance you may get stuck playing it at a point when you're the one that's down and not being able to play the card hampers you. But on the other hand, you're rotating quicker, and if you can play it on turns where you have the board presence, you know, you're doing that much more often to your opponent.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And if I had 3-2 claim plots?
Well, yeah. You probably have the board presence at that point.
Absolutely. And I think Fear of Winter is a card that would, it's a card I would love to see early in a draft because it informs everything else that I'm going to pick. I'm going to, you know, aim for the cheaper stuff so I can have a stronger board presence. So the downside of Fear of Winter probably won't hit me as much because right. hopefully I can have a better board presence going into it. And it's something, a card that I would probably not like to see as much late in the draft because at that point I may have already committed to a different strategy.
Yeah, and trying to shoehorn it in can be very tough.
Yeah. It's a big flashy card that I'm sure a lot of people will just grab just some of the sheer principle, but it definitely doesn't fit every deck.
Well, what's your next one then, Brett?
Well, I'm gonna, shocking everyone, stick with another repeatable effect.
I'm gonna say Targ again.
I was gonna pick a Targ card, but thought I'd done enough, because I was gonna say Viserys Targaryen, the one from the core set, but instead I'm gonna say, the Laughing Storm. Okay. In order to protect you from intrigue claim.
Yeah, he was on my short list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Interesting. I would not have considered him. I guess maybe it's weird. I just feel really aggressive normally when I play draft, which is maybe unusual for me. So I don't feel him as much.
No, I think he's really good. I mean, I was going to say Viserys before I realized that I was only saying Targaryen cards. But they're both similar enough that really they're interchangeable.
So would you back me there then, as far as maybe feeling Targ looks the strongest out of this pool?
Targ's pretty strong. I'll agree with that.
Okay. But yeah, so you're going then with the theme there, potentially Viserys, definitely Laughing Storm, we wound up saying, of repeatable claim mitigation, basically being card advantage.
Yeah, I mean, unless you're Danak taking, you know, 12 claim 2 plots, most of the time you're going to be doing, if you're just going to see claim 1, and so as soon as you can negate that, you're already getting ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that idea in principle. You just probably wouldn't have been on my list.
Well, what's next on your list then?
Well, it is actually not a Targ card, surprising several people at this point, but it is repeatable, and it is from the core set. This is core set Robb Stark.
Mm-hmm. I thought about doing that.
Yeah, and like Dan alluded to earlier, it's great to see some of these cards that have fallen by the wayside in the regular constructed meta for one reason or another have a new life in draft, and this Robb is a bomb in draft where they are almost certainly not going to be able to have, well, I say almost certainly, there's a lot of targeted removal available, but you're much more likely to get a reasonable amount of use out of Robb, I should say, in draft. You know, and he's targeted kill himself, pretty easy trigger. He's well worth the cost, I think.
Yep, and I definitely agree he's great.
Yeah, he's good. Unless your opponent has Venomous Blade.
Yeah, in that case,
less. Yeah, I mean, it is possible, but considerably less likely that they have an instant answer card like they would in draft, in Joust, regular Joust.
All right, next, so this is one I was going to say last time. Also repeatable stand, repeatable claim raising, Red Viper.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he kind of gets overshadowed by the Prince of the Sun version, but, this is the one that's in draft, and he is just phenomenal. I mean, you get multiple uses out of him. You're going to be losing challenges in the game. You know, again, as I mentioned before, odds of him staying on the table a lot longer, having greater impacts, you know, over multiple plots, is going to be a lot higher. And so, you know, still, now, this is just one of those bomb cards we're talking about. You know, lots of board impacts, faces claim, he has renown, he gets past characters. Yeah, he will win you.
Yeah,
pretty much the definition of a bomb card for me. The power grab and the ability to hurt the opponent's board with increasing that claim.
Yeah. He's just expensive.
Yeah. Of course, nice thing in, you know, one of the downsides in regular constructed is he doesn't have that noble crest to protect him, like the more popular Prince of the Sun version. Like we were saying, Valor is much less popular, which is normally what folks are afraid of when the Viper's, you know, concerned. So he may stay around a while in draft.
Alright, Brett. Okay. Next up for me, I feel like I'm beating a dead horse here. As far as repeatable effects go, the Lani Iron Throne.
Nice.
That's a big one. It gives you obviously character ability control as well as potential character control with the Neo.
Cancels. Very nice. People wind up counting on a lot of those abilities. Can really screw up a game plan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Hard to argue with that. I mean, look, I think we mentioned location hate is a lot less prevalent.
Right? Yes.
We have, we have the board crest events. We have Salador San, the machine gun Salador San, who actually can be pretty good in draft himself.
That's true.
But other than that, not a ton. I guess Frozen Solid. But yeah, repeatable locations are pretty good. And Lannister has some of the best.
Indeed. Back to me. Yeah. I'm going to throw out another repeatable effect here. Definitely a theme. I'm going to go with the Ghost of High Heart. It's nice because it gives you the potential for some draw. Maybe you've already got enough Sea Roads on the board, you can toss one to get a card, but more importantly, since, you know, you're limited to whatever you were able to grab out of that draft, people aren't going to have the redundancy of multiple copies of a lot of their really key stuff, so the ability to look at their hand turn after turn and pull whatever's most important means you're probably stripping that from them for the whole game.
Yeah. The knowledge alone is huge.
Oh, yeah. Completely, you know, if they're sitting on one of those Warcraft events or something, being able to knock it out of their hand is even bigger in draft.
Yeah, the only downside is that, you know, if you do get behind in characters, it's not a great body.
No.
But yes, yeah, for all the reasons you stated, too, yeah, you could be a good coach. And that's the only reason why, you know, I didn't choose something like, Circle in Pain, which also, you know, repeatable, pseudo-claim, great character. He just has to kneel. And so that's one less character that you can potentially use in challenges.
Right.
So let's see. This is number 5, I guess, right?
Mm-hmm.
Should be, yeah.
Okay, well, I'm going to go one. I actually think that Lannister and Martell are stronger in draft.
Interesting.
Lannister is the other one that I would say mid is possibly as strong as Targaryen. Martell's pretty good. I'll definitely wouldn't agree with that, but Targaryen and Lannister are the ones that I think are the strongest.
Yeah, so going with one that kind of represents both houses, Sir Aerys Oakheart. He's not repeatable, but he is a 3-cost character with renown, which are harder to come by, and he has a great, interplay effect that actually hits a lot of good characters that you can find in the draft. Even, you know, the ones that we were talking about that are those repeatable sort of effects. Will in Pain, Ghost Salon, Salvador San. Yeah, it's a lot of those annoying characters that you typically don't see in Constructed, but you'll come up against in drafts.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a great tempo play.
Yeah.
And you know, in that one turn knocking out one of their characters, one of their claim soaks. That can help seal the game for you.
It really can.
Alright. Well, my number 5 card is, I'm going to go back to Targaryen. because they have the Corset Caldrogo.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's also on my short list.
Good. Be able to, all you need to do is win a challenge, and you can just jump him in. He avoids pretty much any kind of removal, as long as you play him right. And he's, again, a really well-costed body. Two icons, but still, he's going to win some challenges.
As long as they don't have to Ghost of High Heart.
Exactly.
That's true. Yeah, Ghost of High Heart is better than Caldrogo.
But yeah, I like that Drogo a lot. Probably wasn't really on my short list, but I can't naysay him completely. He's very solid, and that stealth helps you push even more challenges through.
And especially in a format that's at least moderately defined by Wildfire Assaults, he bolsters your character count without putting you in a dangerous place when that block comes around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a really good point.
He really fits a lot of the definition we're talking about Bunker. He's repeatable. He's sort of like card advantage, because he just keeps, you know, going back into your hand. Dodges Wildfire, dodges Valor. So he's very good.
Alright, Will, what's your last one?
My last one may surprise people because it is neither bug nor repeatable. I'm actually headed down the same road as Dan. I'm going to vote Enslaved. I do think, you know, Lannister has some really nice options in draft as well. And Enslaved is that same kind of really solid tempo play. You take out something they were counting on for Claim Soak or what have you, drop it on your side of the board. It's just really great. It kicks them where it counts.
Enslaved was one that I was considering, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and there's when they play that six strength Fanatical Follower and you just take it from them.
Yeah. It's a great feeling.
Yeah. I mean, it's like a two character swing. Like, that's a very good card. So.
There you have it, guys. There's some of our thoughts on draft to help you get all, prepped for the DC tournament if you're headed that way. You guys have anything else you want to throw out there while we're on the topic?
I mean, I can't stress enough how important it is to take characters.
Agreed. If there is only one bit of information to take away from this, I second that. Take characters.
Right. If you already have 3-2 claim plots, go ahead and draft some characters. everyone's welcome to come. We hope to see a lot of people out at NPC, our nation's capital. And I appreciate you, Will and Brett let me come on the show and prop the tournament. And, props to Corey for organizing everything. And he's done a great job. And, props to him, too, for being a champ and not completely abandoning us noobs to our lack of knowledge and letting, kind of keeping the game going in this area, at least, as well. So, props to Corey, props to you guys for what you do for the community. Appreciate it.
Props and flops. Alright, I'll kick things off real quick here with something I'm excited about. And it is Game of Thrones related. I've been meaning to prop this for like 2 months now at this point. Has anybody else noticed on the back of the chapter packs now there's a QR code? And if you scan that with your phone, it pulls up the card images of everything in that pack.
That's really cool.
That is the greatest new advancement that I've seen in FFG product in a long time.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, good on them for doing something like that. Because, I mean, they even, it goes to like a special like FFG site. Look on it when it goes there, like, specially made for this thing. I've only seen it on Game of Thrones right now, maybe on Star Wars.
You know, I did not look at the new Star Wars packs. I should double check. Because I'm hoping that's something that winds up everywhere, and, you know, as they reprint the older packs and everything, it works its way out there. It's because I really want it for the older packs, you know, when I'm sitting here thinking, good grief, why do I only have two copies of To Be a Dragon? you know, I really need to go buy the pack that's in, so I finally have three. Which one is it in? That would be a lifesaver.
Yeah. Except you, then you have to scan every single pack that's on the rack.
Well, okay, good point. Good point. You know, I guess it's better if I already have a vague idea of which one it's in.
But yeah, I mean, that was definitely a pleasant surprise when I saw those on there.
Alright, anybody else?
I have a slop I can throw out. This is a little old at this point because it affected my life several weeks ago. But my wife and I just bought a house, and so we're going through and renovating some rooms. And I have come to loathe anyone that uses wall paint on their popcorn ceiling. Because it makes it very difficult. It makes what should be a very easy job very, very difficult. Normally the popcorn ceiling can just hose it out with some water and it scrapes off just fine when there's ceiling paint used on it. But the actual paint used on walls, seals it in. So you actually have to manually go up and scrape it all off, and it takes hours and hours and hours, and it's awful.
Yeah, it didn't look fun. Didn't look fun.
So that's my slop.
Yeah, I've got a slop. Seasonal. Allergies suck.
Aww.
They really do.
Not one that really hits me, but I empathize. Right?
Yeah.
Did I have that right? No, I sympathize.
You sympathize.
Yeah.
You do not empathize.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you're very lucky. When everyone else is looking forward to the spring, I wish winter clung on a little bit longer. Yeah, mine are the worst in the fall. In the spring, I'm not bothered too much, but the fall will kill me. Yeah, I'm just, this past week, I've just felt like a zombie on drugs and trying to stay awake at work, but I'm pretty sure my boss doesn't listen to this podcast. Pretty sure.
So you can say whatever you want.
Yeah. I think I'll still maintain a little propriety.
Usually a good idea.
You never know. Once it's on the internet, it's
there forever.
Well, I've got another prop I'm going to throw out.
Okay.
That's going to be the Young Justice.
Ooh, great one.
Yeah, you guys have been talking about it for a while. I finally sat down and watched season one on Netflix. That's what I did in basically all my spare time this last week. And it was awesome, and I am extremely sad season two is not on Netflix. Mm-hmm. And even more sad that it got canceled after that.
Yeah.
It was much better than I expected for a superhero show on, what was it, on Cartoon Network?
It was Cartoon Network, yeah.
Yeah, surprisingly smart, a lot of neat, English language jokes, literally about the way words are constructed, which was amazingly cool for an English major like myself. Characters are handled pretty well, male and female. They delve into all sorts of different, obscure parts of the DC universe. I was just extremely happy.
What about you were happy, Will?
I don't think I've seen it.
If you like DC Comics at all, go check it out.
And I'm a huge fan of the DC Universe.
Oh no. Are you just not a comic guy, or are you a Marvel guy?
You know, growing up, I never really got into Marvel. It just seemed so fake. The same thing with DC. So I actually went for the grittier stuff.
Oh, you were an Image
Comics
guy.
Was just coming out. Yeah.
Oh, no, you probably read Spawn, didn't you?
No, I never read Spawn.
Okay, well, that's good.
No. But, I have a feeling if I had found Deadpool at the time, I probably would have enjoyed him.
I hear he's pretty awesome these days, but I've never read any of it, so I should fix that.
I'll have to check that out.
Yeah.
Alright. I have a prop, if you don't mind me cutting it.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Another seasonal. Right now I'm enjoying Anderson Valley Winter Solstice Seasonal Ale. So good.
Winter Solstice. This seems very late or early in the year for that.
Like I said, I'm still trying to cling on to winter.
Oh, okay.
anytime I see Anderson Valley in the store, I just try to snatch it. It's a little expensive, but it's so good. Have you tried it before?
No, I've not.
That's not what I've had.
Anderson Valley. Pick it up. They have a really good summer seasonal ale.
Is it a regional thing? Because I've never seen that one down here in the Midwest.
Let me see. Boonville, California.
Oh, wow. Okay. Sounds like probably nothing.
So California listeners, get on that. Mail me some.
Huh? Yeah. They're coming out to the regional. I can bring you six. Well, you can find some pretty obscure stuff there. Like, you might be able to find it.
Yeah, I'll do a little check-in, and I may check with some of the guys down in Tulsa. I know Chris Kaiser down there is a real beer nut.
All right. Well, I will jump in and do a prop to something that will probably be worth a chuckle. I'm going to prop the A Game of Thrones card game.
Really?
By the time people listen to this, it'll be about 3 weeks ago, but I played for the first time since Worlds and hadn't really thought about the game very much aside from a random text or email with Will here and there. But
we played on Octagon a couple times.
We did play on Octagon a couple times. You're right.
Yeah.
But I have largely put no thought into a Game of Thrones since Worlds. But I am starting to get back into it. I can't tell if my wife is excited or upset about it. So.
She plays her cards close to her vest, so to speak.
Yeah.
Yeah, as long as you're not taking up the entire kitchen table, like, I take up half of mine, and, you know, my wife's kind of okay with that.
Mm-hmm. No, my wife.
I have to clear them off every once in a while.
I have to hide my stuff. Last week, on my day off, I'd run by the local game store down here, Meta Games, and picked up the chapter packs that I'd missed since Worlds. And I was sitting down to actually try to build something, and that didn't go very anywhere for other reasons, but at one point my wife came home on our lunch break because we lived really close to work, and I was terrified that she was going to see the living room in the state it was in because there were cards everywhere that I intended to have picked up by the time she got home, but I was surprised.
Oh, no.
She was largely okay with it.
Okay.
Especially since they were picked up when she got home.
Good.
Go figure. Propping the card game for a specialty podcast about that card game.
Yeah. It's shocking.
That's pretty well me this week, guys. So if you have anything else, jump on in.
I don't.
I got one more prop. I've been reading, have y'all seen the movie Cloud Atlas?
No, I never did get around to it.
No. Yeah, it's, I mean, the movie was interesting. I think it got some mixed reviews or whatever, but it was intriguing enough for me to pick up the book. I've been reading the book. It's very good. Very, very well written. Like, clever. Very interesting idea. Like, with the stories kind of embedded in each other. It's got, it kind of spans, like, eras and centuries, going, like, into the far future when the world collapses and humanity kind of resets. It explores kind of, like, storytelling within each of those. It's very interesting. So, sorry, I hope I didn't get too deep on that. It's supposed to be sort of lighthearted. But
I think we're allowed to get deep every once in a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so you should check it out.
Check that out, yeah.
That's it for me.
All right. Well, Dan, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
No problem. It was fun. And, listeners, if you've got any other drafts, thoughts, or questions, something we didn't really touch on, feel free to mention it in the comics, or comments. Sorry, I'm still thinking about comic books. And, I'll try and swing by and answer something. And I know Dan's around on Card Game DB a lot. Maybe he'll swing by and say something. I can't make any promises for Zyler. He just lurks, mainly.
Yeah.
Well, shoot us an email, gchamps1chomps@gmail.com. Send a comment. See us on Facebook. I hear G Plus is still a thing for the moment, though most of that team at Google's been let go or reassigned. And you can follow us on Twitter at gchamps1chomps as well.
Brett.
That's how I contacted you, Google Plus.
Indeed.
Oh, was it? It was original.
Wow.
I forgot about that.
It has its uses. There we go.
It has its use.
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 Yeah.
Singular.
Brett, why don't you play us out?
All right, well, join us next week. Same bat time, same bat channel, as Will and some other people talk about something else Thrones related.
Danger Zone! The ghost who never